With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
You see these little oak leaves? They're silver. That means that I'm a lieutenant colonel. If there were gold, then I'd be a major. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's good. Because the next time you see an officer of the army, you'll be able to recognize his rank. And he won't get pissed off and accidentally hurt you. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Good.
About your daughter, sir. I want you to know my intentions are strictly honorable.
But yeah, he uses Warden as a confidant. He's like, yeah, as you say, he says, you know, this Mark Harmon kid does this. He's seeing my daughter. Warden's like, you know, maybe just let her. She's not a kid anymore.
Yeah, she's literally 47 years old.
Yeah, she's 47. So the next day, or then maybe the same day, who knows?
That is the other thing. Right. We'll get to it, I think, but there's a lot of drama between Mark Harmon and Meg Ryan about how much they're falling in love. But the timeline of this, I feel like this movie takes place over about 3 or 4 days.
If that, yeah.
And they're like, oh, we've seen a lot of each other and I've fallen hard for you. Really? Because it's Thursday. So it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It's a bit much, love.
I mean, during lockdown, yeah, fair enough. But not in the real world where you can actually move around.
Because
he goes and picks up Connery, because he drops Connery at the museum. He says to Connery, I'll come and pick up you later at the museum. We'll go and see the rich dude, Mark Peel.
Yeah.
So he picks him up, he walks into the museum and says, hey, Jack Warden. Hey, Sean Connery, you ready? So they go and see Mark Peel. It's played by Mark Bloom from Crocodile Dundee, who, as I recall, was like the first big US high profile casualty of COVID.
Yeah.
Very sad.
It was, and this is from the era where he was. This was the only gig he used to get.
He was renting a slime ball.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I've written as well. He was renting 80 slime balls at Crocodile Dundee. This and the Madonna one.
Oh, who's that girl?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He was good at it, to be fair, and he gets nothing to do in this.
No. Well, he gets a shotgun. Imagine sometimes you take a job because you get to run around with a machine gun, which he wasn't offered a lot. Yeah.
No, he would have been good in Crocodile Dundee if he'd done that.
Very different film.
I watched that recently. You know what? It still kind of stands up as being quite fun.
I saw it recently, and yes, it is still fun and funny, but we are in a very different world in terms of gender politics.
Yes. That bit aside, the bit when he's having dinner with Mark Blum is very funny. When Mark Blum's trying to show him up about his menu knowledge.
Every time I stay in a nice hotel, and by nice hotel, I am classifying one as with a bidet. Every time in my head, I smile to myself and say, it's for washing your backside off of your guy to the toilet. Every time.
And I always think of the leg coming around the doorway going, Signor Meek. Oh, hello, Rosalina. Oh. And it's actually her. But yeah, the dinner scene's very funny because Mark Bloom's trying to show him up with his French words. And then he says, oh, have you seen what those people have got over there? And when they all look, he knocks Mark Bloom out. It's quite funny. so he claims his car had been stolen and he has a watertight alibi for the night that Lynch was shot.
Oh, God, he plays it so badly as well. Not as an actor, but as a character. He's like, did you hear that? My car has been stolen. It was my wife's car, but it's been stolen and it was used in a murder? Oh, how awful. Anyway, please help yourselves to a...
I've just realised this is an episode of Minder, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is...
It really is. Connery is George Cole. And Mark Harmon is Dennis Waterman. And they're trying to find out what happened to, like, Gonchi McPherson, who was murdered while delivering a bag of tools.
Broadly speaking, this film has the production qualities and what have you of a mid-range, mismatched cop buddy pilot.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Except they're too apart in terms of the spectrum. Like Riggs and Murtaugh are close because they have really good chemistry on screen. That's easy to see. But Connery and Harmon have no chemistry, and also their characters are so belligerently different.
Yeah,
you don't sort of empathise with either of them.
I suppose I'm on Connery's side just because that happens.
It's just because it's Connery.
Yeah, exactly.
If he was played by, if he was played by Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire.
Well, yeah, but well, let's see if we can think of someone who's between Sean Connery and Peter Sutcliffe. Like,
okay,
so like originally this was written for
Brian Blessed.
No, but because this was originally written for Lee Marvin and Jeff Bridges.
Yes,
and because I have no feelings about Lee Marvin, really.
No,
I with the same writing, I'm like, I don't give a shit about this guy. I think you're right. Yeah.
No, I think it's just purely. You can say what you like about Connery. Yes, he's an awful person, or was. This is the first podcast we've done since he's passed away.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. God, the day he died, I got about a million DMs.
Sorry.
Like he was my dad.
Yeah, well,
it was really weird. he had a lot of charisma and a lot of charm.
Yes,
and he did. Actual magic on screen.
Whereas, which makes it so much harder for Mark Harmon, who is functional.
Yeah. Functional.
He's a TV guy. He's a TV actor. And obviously he's been
since.
Or what it was. NCIS?
CSI Pedophile.
Whatever it is, it's been running so long.
Newington.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's been doing it so long, I think he started around the same time as this film was made.
I think so. I can't think of any other big films he was in.
Hang on.
Apart from Summer School.
There must be something. He must have got a couple of things. But you're right. God, I can't think of anything.
No, I can't.
Not even as, like, the sleazy ex-boyfriend or something like that, which you'd think he would have made his 90s out of. Hmm. Yeah, he didn't have much of a career.
No, but while they're in Peel's office, Connery notices lots of Vietnam-era paraphernalia.
Yeah, but we don't know that.
No, we don't.
Because they get chucked out, and he goes, and Mark Hamill's just like, oh, we wasted our time going there. And Connery goes, you didn't see what was on his desk. But they keep rowing, and at no point does Mark Hamill, the detective, say, all right, what was on his fucking desk? We don't find that out for another half an hour.
Half an hour. I just wrote that down because it was important later. But then he says, can I buy you a cup of coffee?
And yeah, Connery's we go. Like,
me? A cup of coffee? Okay. So they go to a bar, and they're drinking coffee, but there are some people in there who take offence to the fact that Connery is an officer.
Just to be clear, they're not healthy-looking men, the people who come up and try and start a fight. Say what about Connery. Connery, how old was Connery at this point? I guess he would have been 57. 56, 57 doing this. Hmm. And he is a fine figure of a man. He's clearly in shape. He's in a military outfit, so you can tell from that he's a trained killer who looks like one.
Can I just say, he's not wearing a hairpiece in this. Very rare.
Yeah.
Not many roles he did that.
I guess there was... he had just done Untouchables, I guess, with the sim.
Yeah, but he wears a hat mostly in that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But in this, quite a lot, he's got his old bald head out.
Yeah.
Huh. So these Trump supporters who are storming the Washington Today in this bar, future Trump supporters.
Yeah. None of these people made it out of the 90s alive. Their cardiovascular system was not built to last.
True. But they start mocking him. And then one even comes down the stairs and starts picking on him. And calling him, what does he call him, Colonel?
I think he is a Colonel, so he gives him...
he calls him Major.
Maybe. Major, yeah.
Yeah. And Connery says to him, leave us alone. And the guy just keeps pushing. And then he says, I can do more damage to you with my right thumb.
Left thumb.
Then you can do... with me at all, or something like that. And the guy's like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah.
Because I'd use my right thumb, but it'd be too much for you.
Yeah. And then the guy starts on him, and then Connery does indeed sort of beat him up with just his thumb.
Yeah. Well, I want to be clear about this. He's got his thumb out slightly. Mm. He's using his whole fist.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's just got a little bit of a thumb out.
He's basically pushing him into people's dinners.
He's pushing...
Like people are sitting down having dinner and he's pushing them onto their table.
I have to be honest with you, right? I support Connery in everything he does, right? But in this one, him and Harmon are the issue.
They are.
Also, this is happening at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because you can tell people are there. The lunchtime crowd is there. They're clearly people who've just come and have a nice risotto for lunch and they're just having Sean Connery thumb a man into their dinner.
And then when his mates come down to help... Harmon pulls a fucking gun out and says, make it fair. I'm like, what do you mean, make it fair? You've got them at gunpoint.
Yeah. Pound for pound, Mark Harmon and Sean Connery have behaved much more illegally than these guys.
Definitely. And then he basically just says, and he pins the guy up with his thumb still.
Yeah.
And says,
you see these stripes on my shoulder? That's shit from earlier, but that doesn't matter right now. The ones next to them, that makes me a colonel.
So have some respect, you piece of shit.
Can I offer you a bollock?
I've got one in my pocket here. It's a bit wrinkled.
But it's oregano from my own garden.
It was a fox. I saw it this morning and I was shooting birds.
And this scene feels... And then, there's the gag at the end.
What's the gag? I can't remember.
Harmon, because before the fight starts... Harmon says, what are you doing? You asking me what my intentions towards your daughter are?
Yes.
And then the fight starts. And then after he beats the guy up with his thumb, Harmon goes, just so you know, my intentions to your daughter is strictly honourable. That's quite nice. But the whole scene is, because of the era it was, I think, again, if it was an action drama thriller thing, you had to have a bar brawl. And it's like they finished and went, we haven't got a bar brawl. But there's no logical reason why the man picks a fight with Sean Connery.
It feels like one of those scenes that's been cynically crafted to be shown on film 87.
Yeah.
You'd always get a scene like this in a film where they put it on, and then you imagine as they walk out, Harmon says that line, it'll cut to Barry Norton, and then turns back to the camera and goes, lovely. Then they split up, they go their separate ways, and then Harmon is at work and he gets a phone call saying, there's a little package for you in Chinatown. You might want to go and pick it up because it won't be there for long.
Oh, there's one scene in between, which is Meg Ryan and Jack Warden go for a walk in a graveyard. God,
it's so weird and creepy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And I think it's just there because he's just like, because obviously he's known Meg Ryan, the character, his entire life, and he's basically just says, hey, your old man can be a bastard, but you love him, and I'm really just here to remind you that I'm a character in this movie because it matters more than the third act. Right? But it is pointless. And they've just clearly gone to a graveyard. They could have gone anywhere. I don't think they even mentioned that it's a graveyard. I think it's just because it's like, technically, you can shoot in those without having to get a license.
I think it's because you look at Jack Warden and you think we should probably keep him near one. He might be in there soon. Although he lasted a lot longer, to be fair.
He did. God bless Jack Warden, who died this century.
Wasn't he in Problem Child?
He was, yeah. Jack Warden was great. He was in everything. He was in the show. Great. What was the name of the show he was in when we were kids? Like, I want to say it was called Fox and Friends. It was a private eye and his son who's a cop.
Oh, Crazy Like a Fox.
Crazy Like a Fox, which I looked up the other day. In my head, that show ran for 17 years throughout my entire childhood. It ran for about 28 weeks, and the BBC just repeated it for a decade.
I was going to say, it must have been repeated, because the only thing I remember about that is that they had a Ferrari.
Did
That's
they?
All I remember. I might be remembering it wrong.
I think maybe one episode they rented a Ferrari.
Were they like private detectives?
He was a private detective and his son was a cop. And the setup was, every week it was a call from the son just going, hey, I need you to help with a case. Just remember, I'm the cop, not you. And he's just like, hey, what's the worst that can happen? And then it's always something.
His dad would go into a chicken coop and rip the necks out of chickens.
Yeah, because how does this help the investigation? I don't know. I'm crazy in a way that I don't know how to describe.
And then they ended, sadly, that last episode where he was chased over fields by men on horses and dogs. And then he was killed.
I know. What a finale.
It was awful, but, you know, they didn't get a second season, so why not? Why not go out with a full stop?
second row. Oh, God. No one's thought about that show in 30 years. And now we've brutally murdered Jack Warden.
I think it was Stephen J. Cannell, wasn't it? Wasn't he behind all of them? Wasn't he just like that scene at the end of his shows where he threw the paper over his shoulder?
That was him, yeah.
I've written another one. I've written another one because there was loads of things like Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Well, A-Team was him.
A-Team, yeah. Airwolf.
And it's just, I loved that because it gave a really terrible idea for future writers going, yeah, when you finish a page, just fucking chuck it away. Someone will pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Tarantino did. That's why he gets so many leaks on the internet.
Yeah. Imagine if that is actually how Stephen J. Cannell was working. And every time they get a script, they're like, this is a shambles. This doesn't make any sense. Is this supposed to be a flashback? No, I just chucked him on the floor and somebody else picked him up. I can't be fucked. I'm Stephen J. Cannell. I haven't got time to... Can't you just put him in a little pile next to the typewriter? No, I'm Stephen J. Cannell.
That's not what I do. Have you seen what I do?
Yeah, look at my
That's my thing.
Yeah, look at my logo, you bitch.
That could be a man he's talking to as well. That's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that wasn't supposed to be sexist. That was.
No, Dan is the least sexist person I've met.
Yeah. What's wrong with being sexist?
Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You'll get stormed.
I know.
Yeah.
That was, just to be clear, that was supposed to be a Spinal Tap reference.
Of course.
So. I know what's wrong with being sexist. I've had it explained to me by the Twitter.
I am as God's made me, sir. So then the turns out his package in Chinatown isn't a sex doll or anything, or like some really good chow mein. It's Colonel Lawrence. And Harmon busts him and says, I told you I was going to get you when you're on my jurisdiction. You are now, bitch. And Lawrence is like, oh, and he looks really sad about it. And then he kicks Harmon and runs off.
Yeah, and it goes really Naked Gun now.
It goes on forever as well. Because the most boring foot chase in the world.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why.
Please.
They do a thing that I've never seen in an on-foot chase before. They've used the camera as Lawrence's POV, but not his eyes, his back. So we are his back as he's running away from Mark Harmon, because we can see Mark Harmon. And clearly, Lawrence is pushing people out of the way, because you keep getting stuntmen falling into scene like, right? And it looks absolutely ridiculous. Oh. I've never seen any, because the thing is, it doesn't, if you could see the whole thing, you'd see what was happening. But what it actually looks like is extras randomly falling into frame.
Oh my,
yeah. It looks really weird.
It looks really weird and stupid.
Oh yeah, it doesn't work at all. But it's still better shot than some of the action scenes in like something like, I don't know, like the Deadpool. Like, this is a better San Francisco action film than the Deadpool.
Well, I said to you that this would make a good Dirty Harry film.
Yes.
If you replace Mark Harmon with Harry Callahan, it would be really good. But you'd have to switch the roles around. You can't have two grizzled, disgruntled old men.
No.
You'd have to have like a Tom Cruise from A Few Good Men as the Sean Connery role. And Harry Callahan as the policeman.
Yeah. Or I don't know. I can see it working when there's a kind of a grumpy old man. I don't think anyone's ever done this. Two detectives back on the case.
That's true.
Yeah, God, has anyone ever done that?
No, they should, though. Because this would make a really good Dirty Harry film.
Yeah, but I can see actually working with some guy he was in the army with who's his age. That might be quite interesting, because all of Dirty Harry's partners are always like younger, inexperienced.
Mm-hmm. Or his actual boyfriends.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All right.
Well. Oh, by the way, if you haven't heard, Dan has got a podcast called The Podcast With No Name. I forgot to mention that up top.
That's fine.
Where he does Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood, sorry. I became the man from Crocodile Dundee 2. Do you know who that is? Clint Eastwood. Dan has got a Clint Eastwood podcast called The Podcast With No Name. So far, there's only two episodes out, right?
There will be more. It's just, it's been a hell of a year.
We've got up with hands, isn't it? We're in a new one already. He said that. We're already 6 days into it.
Oh.
I did the Deadpool with Dan. And if you haven't heard it, you should listen to it because it's great. And then a mutual friend of ours did Dean Burnett, Dr. Dean Burnett, did Space Cowboys. And they're both very good.
Yeah. I've recorded a bunch. It's just a matter of editing them and uploading them, posting them to the internet.
And I'm very proud because you used my laugh from a very good joke that I did.
I did. That's going to be...
You've used that as my... Of your Stephen J. Cannell.
That is exactly. That is exactly.
So basically, he gets... Him and Lawrence have a foot chase. It ends, unfortunately, with Lawrence getting run over and killed.
Yeah, hang on, because that is such a massive thing that happens there, right? So he happens to come out of an alley just as this yellow sports car is going past at 100 miles
an
hour.
It's like a Trans Am, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Trans Am, right?
It's the most distinctive car you could possibly use in a hit and run.
And it has to
be. It might as well have been the A-Team van.
The thing is, I mean,
or
just...
Airwolf.
Not to spoiler it, but it turns out that it wasn't accidentally going past.
No, no.
Right? But just logically, how is that car going to know that he was going to come out of that alley at the exact moment that he does?
No.
Because it's not like he's parked there. You can tell how fast he's going. He's coming from up the road. He hasn't been like parked by the alley waiting until he comes out. He was already in motion. This is so illogical.
He could have gone anywhere. He could have gone to the top of a building. And what would they have done? Then they would have got Airwolf out.
Yeah. It should have been like... Honestly, the driver was like, "Dumb, that was a bit of fucking luck."
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense. And later on, we find out he killed him. You're supposed to have forgotten how this scene played out, I think.
Well, because when they reveal it, you're kind of like, oh, yeah. Because you forget what happened.
Yeah.
So Connery turns up at the crime scene and says to Harmon, we had a deal. If the bullet was a match, we were going to go and shoot him together. And he's like, I didn't have time. And he's like, bullshit. You dick. And then it turns out that he reveals here that Peel, so Mark Bloom earlier.
Harmon is also the worst cop in the world. Yeah.
Definitely.
Because he's just like, well, that's the end of that chapter. Mm. What? But what are you talking about? Where he definitely did it. Why? Because he ran away. Yep. Mm. Like this guy, Harmon is a homicide cop who doesn't know anything about the law. He just, if somebody runs, they did it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Connery just bollocks him.
Well, Connery bollocks him and then says that when we were in Peel's office, I saw pro-Vietnam, I saw Vietnamese paraphernalia. And it turns out he was in the CIA.
That's right, yeah.
Oh.
And he pieces it together and goes, I saw some coasters on his desk. They were from a bar in Saigon. And the only people who go to bars in Saigon are the CIA.
Mm.
Is the logic of this movie.
That's the logic. And Harmon's like, okay. Right.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to. Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great apps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So they then go back to the officers' club.
Oh, it's so boring now.
It's really boring. And they find out that the... Because at the beginning, when Harmon turned up to the officers' club, there's a weird bit where he puts his hand in a plant pot, brings out the water and smells it.
Yeah, and we never know why. No. In fact, Connery's very first line in the movie is something like, he's talking to some junior officer or like a sergeant. He goes, "I didn't ask what type of plant it was. I asked you if you'd watered it." It was like, it seems so nothingy at the time, but it turns out it's the whole case is on whether or not these plants were watered.
Because they go into the storeroom and they think that the killer was at the Presidio that night trying to break into a storeroom to retrieve a bottle of spring water. So a bottle of water cooler, plastic bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
So then they get the name of the delivery driver who delivers the water.
Christ almighty.
They go into the company that delivered it and they speak to the secretary, who it turns out is a big fan of the Dead.
Yeah, yeah, the Grateful
Dan,
Dead.
I bet you don't know.
Of course I know the Dead.
I bet you don't know the Dead are. Sean Connery doesn't.
Because it's not his thing. But also, right, so they go into the office and this woman is in the office and you can tell straight away that she's a Grateful Dead fan because she's got Grateful Dead posters all over the wall of her office. You can't do that in a workplace.
No.
For a start. And Harmon tells her a bollocks story that is, I borrowed his car. He's my dad. Because I look just like him. Everyone does. So I thought I'd come down here and find. And I noticed it was one of your delivery drivers that scratched the car of his that I borrowed. And it's like, this is a lot of story now.
It's going way too over the top.
And it's like the more you tell, it's definitely bollocks. And he goes, and it was scratched by one of your water delivery men. Yeah. Could I have his? And I could sue you, the company, but I won't. I just, for no reason, I want that driver's home address, please.
And that driver's name is George Spotka.
Yes.
Which is a Peter Hyams thing.
Yeah.
Because I knew the name, and then I messaged you and said, that was from Outland, wasn't
it? Spotter. Spotter.
Spotter.
In fact, specifically George Spotter, because it's Peter Hyams' wife's. Her name is George Spotter.
Her name is George Spotter.
It actually is. I'm not joking.
Hmm.
He married a George.
And her sister's name is Train.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so it's a Peter Hyams trope. And I said to you, oh, is it in Copland? And you returned to me a moment later and said, yes, it is.
Oh, not Copland. So, Outland, yeah, yeah.
No, I'm not Copland, sorry. Time Cop.
Time Cop, yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, there's also in there as well. Yeah, so, wow. So he manages to, he then says to her, like, you know, it's pretty bad damage, so could you give me the address of that guy as well? And she's like, well, I shouldn't, but as you like the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're into the same band, I will definitely breach of data.
I mean, that's probably how that fella from the Lost Prophets got on. So they get in the car, and Connery's like, oh, how did you get that information? And he's like, she's into the Dead, man. And he's like, watch the Dead. And he's like, well, you wouldn't understand, old man. I'm like, fucking hell, that's embarrassing, isn't it?
I mean, they were a band from the 60s.
I mean, they were out of date in 1987, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they say, like, I don't know, Dead or Alive or Wham, at least?
Fucking or Wham. That'd be amazing.
The Human Leagues.
Watch Milli Vanilli.
Yeah. Watch Milli Vanilli. If you ask me, they're not even singing the fucking songs.
I think that prick's lip shanking. He's what? He's lip shanking.
You're so old, you don't know anything. But it turns out that Caldwell recognizes the name Spotter and says, oh, he served under Lawrence in Vietnam. And then so Harmon goes and checks Spotter's house, and then that car is outside, but it's been painted a different color.
Oh, God, I hate this so much.
But this is what I was saying. When he then sort of plays with the car and a bit comes off and it's yellow underneath, I was like, oh, yeah.
He looks at the car. He goes, I recognize that car. Why? It's a Trans Am. There's a lot of them. And he happens to go to the trouble of kneeling down by the rear number plate and just poking away at it. And he goes, well, what about it? Like, it's yellow. But it's luck. It's all just luck. He wouldn't do it.
Why would you use the most distinctive sports car in American culture to do a hit and run? Why not use like a Lada or a Ford Escort? A fucking Trans Am. It's like, well, we've got two suspects. Who are they? Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah. Or Ken Smith, who drives a Ford Fiesta. Wouldn't be him. Who does a drive by shooting in a Fiesta? No, it's probably him with the Trans Am then.
Yeah, that guy with the Trans Am.
It's probably him.
But meanwhile, Sean Connery finds out that water company is owned by Peel. I mean, they're just not covering their tracks, are they, Dan?
There's a bit we missed. So there's another date scene.
Oh, the dinner.
They're walking by the bridge. They're just out by the Gongit Bridge.
And he tells her he loves her.
Oh, there's all that bollocks. And like I say, we are on about day three of the investigation.
He says, you know what? He says something that sort of suggests that he wants to dump her. Because he says something like, don't you think that we've done something or other? And she's like, what do you mean? And he turns to her and says, it's just that I think I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like,
I really care about you. Yeah, yes. He says that. And it's the thing is, in a better movie, you'd be like, you buy it because there would be I don't know, it would feel more substantial, but it's just, you don't feel like it's trying to be like an erotic thriller and they've got this immovable love and chemistry between them, but it's not there.
This film needs more fucking...
I think maybe it needs some or none, and certainly that one scene on the bonnet isn't enough. I think maybe if you got the sense they were just these, if you did have a scene that was, the scene in the Terminator where they finally fuck.
Yeah.
There's something about that that's like, you kind of weirdly, you get the connection.
You mean between Connery and Jack Warden?
Yeah, Jack Warden, I just want to be clear, we're all talking about the same thing, yeah?
On top, riding Connery.
Yeah. I should have left you scotch ass in my bed last night. Scotsman. You should have left your Scotsman's ass.
I mean, we can pretend that we won the Vietnam War, but we can't pretend that we don't love each other.
I don't know how to quit you.
Should we go bareback? So, yeah, they have that walk and it's really tedious. And then Connery finds out that the water company is owned by Peel. So then we have the annual policeman's ball.
Oh, yeah. Where does this come from? It must be a missing scene, yeah.
It's really weird because Meg Ryan has basically now decided that she's going to flirt with everybody in front of Mark Harmon to piss him off.
So there's some sort of a base dinner. We don't know what it is, but Meg Ryan's there and she's taken Mark Harmon with her. I don't know why. They've known each other 72 hours.
He's not happy being there because of obviously the history with everybody else he used to work with.
I get the sense she slept with every other man on the base.
That's what I mean, yeah. She's come from a sex comedy.
But,
And she's flirting with people in front of him. She asks the man to dance, goes a bit too OTT with him, and then she brings him back to the table. Now Mark Harmon's like, why are you doing this? And then the guy's like, hey, don't talk to her like that. And then he punches the guy. Did he kick the guy in the balls?
Oh, something like that. And then he cooks him.
And then he says to Meg Ryan, is that what you wanted? And then he goes, I'm going. And he storms out.
Yeah.
So Meg and Sean Connery go home and they argue. And then she makes a reference to her mother. This is how you treated mum and that's why she killed herself. And then Connery raises his arm to her.
Stops
himself.
I think this is something Mitch Benn said as well on Outland. At this period, he was like, as long as there was one scene where he got to do some proper acting, that was enough for Connery, and this is his acting scene in this. Because other than this, he's got no hard work to do whatsoever.
Absolutely not.
No. And this is the one of two drama scenes he really has in this movie. And he's very good, and they're both very good, actually. In a better film, this is a much more moving scene, because she accuses him of, you're the reason my mother killed herself. He raises his hand to her, which is actually has more connotations when it's Connery doing it.
Exactly.
It seems like this, you go, oh, that's why Connery was Connery.
Yeah. But he stops himself and then he goes away. And then my favourite scene in the film, I think, is when he taps on Jack Warden's window. And Jack Warden comes out and he tells him that, he's had a row with Meg Ryan. And then he says to him, I'm going on the roof. And Jack Warden goes, why? And he goes, because your window sill hurts my ass. And then they go up on the roof and they have a lovely little chat about old times and how the world's changed and all that sort of thing.
Because Connery is getting outside a bottle of scotch. Yeah. I was going to ask you this, actually. Does he do much drunk acting in his career?
Not really.
No, I didn't think he did. This is the only one I can think of.
The man who would be king, he does a bit.
Yeah.
But not really, no. He's always very sort of level-headed.
Because it feels like it's something every actor should do at some point in their career, is a scene where they have to pretend to be completely mashed up.
He does it quite well in this.
I think he does. But as I said to you, his voice goes around a little bit.
Yeah.
And at one point, he does do a Christopher Walken impression.
Yes. You sent me the clip and I didn't get to fucking listen to it. What does he say?
He goes, so Jack Warden says, Connery says something like, she knows I love her. Oh, no, yeah, I love her, you know. And he goes, yeah, and Jack Warden says, you know, you can say, but when's the last time you said it to her? And Connery goes, she knows.
That's right.
And it doesn't sound like him at all for a second. But he's fine as doing the drunk acting. It feels like acting.
Yeah, and it's kind of the turning point for his character, because then he realizes that he's got to chill out a bit, otherwise he's going to lose his daughter, and maybe there's nothing he can do about Harmon and Meg Ryan being together. So perhaps he should just go along with it rather than being an obstacle. So the next day, he meets up with Mark Harmon and they decide they're going to follow Spotter during his delivery.
We just missed the one bit where he cares the backstory, because I don't know about you, but I was wondering the entire time, why is Sean Connery in the American military?
Oh, God, yeah, go and tell that. That's interesting.
So he says, he tells a story of how his family moved to America when he was 10.
That's right.
So he, like I say, 57-ish. So he's been in America for 47 years, since he was 10 years old. And he still sounds like Sean Connery. You know, yes, that's right. I've been in San Francisco my entire life, born and raised. Go Giants. No, I'm not buying it.
Vote Harvey Milk.
Yeah. In fact, weirdly, he still uses British words. Like, he say all the way through the movie, he says rubbish instead of trash for a start.
Did you read that when he died? Did you read that screenwriter? Forgive me, I don't remember who it was. But a screenwriter did a really good thread about working with Connery and working up a film they were thinking about doing.
Right. No, I didn't read this.
It was really good because it just said that Connery invited him round and was a bit cold at first. But when it was clear that he had the same ideas as Connery in terms of the film, Connery just basically from that day on treated him like a really good friend and would have him round all the time. And would be very active in working out the screenplay. And he even invited him to his house in, I think it was it the Bahamas or Barbados? I can't remember which. Had him out there, you know, flew him out there and all that sort of thing. And when it became clear the studio wanted to change the script that the screenwriters had and replace them with different screenwriters, Connery said, no, I want these screenwriters or nothing. And he walked away from the project.
And that movie was The Hottie or The Naughty.
That's right. That movie was Hot Dog the Movie.
I think he had a lot of respect for making films. I think at a certain point in his career, there was a little bit of, you know, do the job, get paid, fuck off.
Yeah.
But I think even in every job, there was something that there was a reason you would have to do. Because he was still, even when he was kind of the wilderness years in the sort of late 70s to when he did The Untouchables, that was that kind of career resurgence thing. He was still in demand. I mean, he could still turn things down. He was never going to be broke again, ever. So there still had to be something that he loved about it. And he must have, I'm sure there was something in every single project that he saw. He was, I love this and I want to do this. With that said, I did Google any good golf clubs around the San Francisco area, and there are a few. So that is a possibility. There was that.
I think that's definitely the case, because that story about Time Bandits is how he did, why he did it, isn't it?
Oh, really?
The Time Bandits script they wrote famously, an actor appears who looks like, he says, you know, the king he plays. I can't remember the name in the Greek.
Leonidas? No, it's not Leonidas. No,
whatever it was. Yeah. It says an actor who looks like Sean Connery, but obviously a cheaper version. And then they sent it to Sean Connery, and he did it purely because it was they filmed it in somewhere in Spain that was near a lot of golf courses they used.
Okay, but he was going to be there anyway. I guess that makes sense.
I think very much he was a soldier of fortune, but in a very good way.
Yeah,
a lot of actors are.
I can't think of anything where you would genuinely say he phoned in his performance.
Absolutely not. So I was just going to say, apart from sort of the later films, But even then, he's got enough charm, and going back to what I said earlier, he's got enough charisma and magic on screen that you kind of, he can elevate a film that's not very good. And this is a great case of that. And also something like Family Business.
Oh, which I've never actually seen.
It's dreadful. But
oh, is it really?
Yeah, you know, it's him and Dustin Hoffman are good in it, but the rest of it's pretty poor.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, but he has certain powers, I think, as a presence.
Yeah, he knew how to walk into a room in a movie and he knew how to make that compelling. And it wasn't even that he knew how to do it; it's just he couldn't help himself. There is something ridiculously charismatic. Even when I watched that scene by scene with Mark Cousins with him. So even when he's not acting, there's something about him just opening the door to Mark Cousins. He was just naturally was just this ridiculous persona.
Charismatic, and also like you think of things like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where he turns up at the end, and when he says, you know, I cannot allow this marriage to continue. You're like,
I speak, I remember. That is one of the one of the most memorable moments of a film ever, because I already loved Sean Connery because of James Bond and Indiana Jones and all that, and that, and I had not enjoyed the movie Prince of Thieves up until that point, and when that happened, I remember beaming, I remember the smile on my face, because this is going to be really entertaining for the next 37 seconds, whatever happens. So yeah, even like an 11-year-old kid is like, I fucking love this guy. That you've got something.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Him and Roger Moore both had that, I think. But Sean probably a bit more, because he was a bit more diverse in terms of what he did for film roles.
Yeah, I think he, with no disrespect to Roger Moore, I think Connery was... Roger Moore was Roger Moore, and he was a star. But Connery was a star, but he really was an actor.
Yep. And he did... Connery did a lot of projects that Roger wouldn't have done.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
But then again, Connery wouldn't have done Bullseye, so...
No, or Fire, Ice and Dynamite.
No, absolutely not. No, he wouldn't have done that.
Because you can't golf in that part of the world. There's nothing there.
I think Sean was more Hollywood than Rog, though. Like, Sean... Rog lived in Switzerland, whereas Sean lived, obviously, in the West Indies or Caribbean or whatever, but he was very much would approach Hollywood for his next projects, whereas I think Sean was... Roger was a bit more... I'll just do what they offer me if it's right.
That's true. I think Connery was maybe just more...
You can't imagine Roger Moore doing a Michael Bay film, for instance.
No. But then I don't know how much did Roger Moore, do you think, enjoy the acting part? Because he seemed annoyed that he had to be Bond for the last...
I think you're
four
right.
..four or five years he wanted to do it. I think he'd made his money and he was quite happy. Was Connery... Connery has that vibe of a lot of actors you still get, the ones who grew up really poor, who feel, even into his 60s, even into his 70s, really, he was like, you know, I could lose all of this. I need to find the next fucking job, you know. And he still had his pleasures in life, the golf and everything else. But he was still like, he still had that, like a real blue-collar work ethic.
Well, Rog was raised poor, but he fell into a lot of successful projects.
Mm.
Like he was, when James Garner left Maverick, Rog took over. Then he was Ivanhoe, or maybe before that. Then he was the Saint. Then he's James Bond.
Mm.
So it's a lot of franchises he did.
That's true. He did, because he was 20. Oh, God. How old was he when he finished doing Bond? He was in his late 50s.
He was 58. 57, 58.
Because he kind of practically retires after Bond, doesn't he? He just does bits and pieces. He
does bits and pieces, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Connery, you know.
He was still doing Billy the Vet.
Oh God.
We should do that one day.
All right, I'm going to need a lot more gin for that one.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to this film.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, so the next day, Mark Harmon and Sean Connery follow Spotter on all his deliveries. And then he makes a delivery to Travis Air Force Base, picks up a water bottle that was brought to the base from the Philippines.
Yeah. They've been staking him out for about 5 minutes, and they with a bit of luck, that's when the thing that he's smuggling in arrives.
Mm. So Harmon and Connery see the conspiracy to come together. Spotter, Lawrence, and Peel all knew each other in Vietnam. Spotter picked up a delivery of water from the Philippines, but accidentally left the water bottle in the storeroom at the Presidio. When he realized his mistake, he went back to retrieve it, but Vasquez surprised him during the break-in, and he shot her.
And by the way, this isn't them being told this. This is Harmon piecing it together and just going, this must be what happened. It's like, I guess, I mean, it does fit, but that could be anything.
But Connery says to this theory, that's good, but there's one piece missing. There's someone else.
There's another hand in this.
That's right. And then just as he says that, Jack Warden pulls up in his car. And he's like, he goes, oh, no.
He goes, yeah, that's exactly. He goes, there's another hand in this. Jack Warden comes, he goes, oh, shit.
Yeah. And he goes, what? And then Jack Warden gets out. And then Harmon goes, oh, shit. So Warden goes in and suddenly has this massive crisis of confidence.
Yeah.
And says to Peel, that, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. It's really bad.
Well, he goes, no one was supposed to die.
Mm.
And he goes, well, no one was meant to die. And then the henchman who's unnamed says, oh, it's a little late to grow a conscience. It's like, well, to be fair, you're just smuggling diamonds out of the Philippines. I'm not sure that's the most immoral thing that's ever happened, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I should say, you just mentioned it, but the water bottle was full of diamonds.
Yeah. Which I looked up. Apparently, it is a myth that you can smuggle diamonds in water. They have different qualities in terms of how they react to light. So, in fact, diamonds are very obvious in water.
What you have to do is, like in the Living Daylights, you put them within ice and with a heart in there.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
So when they open up, you can't tell the ice from the diamonds.
Yeah, imagine that they were so thick. They go, we got a bottle of water, and what they've done is they've jammed a human heart into it, so you can't tell it's full of diamonds. They're very clever, these boys. Oh,
very good. So then Jack Warden comes in, and then he pulls out his gun that he had that you mentioned earlier. Connery gave him in the museum.
Oh, yeah, that was alluded to during the drunk scene, going, is that my gun? Yeah, why are you walking around with that? And Jack Warden goes, I got my reasons, and it just doesn't bring it. Fair enough, then. I'll just finish this whiskey.
Yeah. Nothing to worry about there.
Yeah.
It's all a bit Death Wish 3. They then get into an argument, and
there's a massive exposition dump here. Where
massive exposition dump.
Peel says things that the audience needs to know for anything to make sense, but which everyone in the room already knows.
Well, he says it has to stop. And then, as you say, he tells everybody that's watching the plot. And then they basically knock the gun out of his hands. And just as Peel is about to kill him, Connery and Harmon come in. And then there's a massive gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Warden gets shot with a shotgun. It goes on forever.
Oh, there's one thing, though, because the only reason we find out that Jack Warden's been doing this is because he's being blackmailed by Peel. And that's maybe important.
He says, if you don't do what we're telling you here, we'll show everybody a problem in Child 2.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes on forever. And then there's a shootout, which is really confusingly done. Because Mark Harmon basically spends the whole time, it seems, laying down on the conveyor belt holding a shotgun.
Yeah.
Going up and down.
Yeah. Whereas Connery and Jack Warden, the elderly Connery and Warden, are really up to their ankles in water and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's lots of water being shot out and stuff. So there's like a whole fountain, like a whole flood of water on the floor.
It's a very dull scene. Because remember, this is an era where every third act action scene had to take place in a warehouse or a cannery or an industrial building of some sort. Yeah. And it's very...
By the numbers.
Yeah. There's an amazing part where one of the henchmen thinks that Mark Harmon is hiding behind a barrel.
My favourite bit in the film.
Oh, yeah. With the water barrels with the machine gun.
Yeah.
And he shoots, and about 30 bullet shots, but he only had money for like two bullet hole squibs.
Yeah. And what does Harmon say as he comes past on the conveyor belt?
Oh, God, I don't know. I can't remember.
It's something like, you're wrong.
God.
And then he shoots him.
I did not remember it. It's
something like that. It's really embarrassing.
Not even like a conveyor belt pun. Like, I'd like to convey to you that you're dead.
No, nothing like that. He says something like nice. He says something like you're wrong or wrong place. It's really bad.
Could have gone water. He could have had a water pun. Water, palaver, bang.
He could have said H2O. Yeah. But yeah, so he shoots. They all get shot. And then Jack Warden sort of dying. And then the Peel comes along and he's shooting at Jack Warden and Sean Connery. And then Mark Harmon shoots him.
Yeah, it's really dull.
And then they're all dead. And then Jack Warden dies. And then Connery turns to Harmon and says, would you do me a favour? would you delay your report for 48 hours so we can give Jack Warden a burial?
Buried with honours. Yeah. He deserves that.
And then he says, okay. And then they have a military funeral. And then Connery gives like a tearful eulogy.
Yeah.
Which is like the most emotional scene I've ever seen Sean Connery ever do.
Yeah.
Proper tears.
Yeah.
Never seen that before.
He's this is one of those, in a movie that was worth a damn, that would be the Oscar clip.
Yeah.
Because it's a perfectly Oscar winning performance in this scene. It's like incredible.
When I first saw Jack Warden in Problem Child 2, I wanted to cry.
Because I was his agent and I'd gotten the job and I feel like a piece of shit. But he's so good in it. And it's just because it's, and in a good movie, there wouldn't be a dry eye in the house.
No,
in this
absolutely.
Movie. But because it's such a disposable nothing and you've just been in a very tedious scene with a water gun thing.
A gunfight, Dan, in a water factory.
Yeah, not a water pistol thing.
No. It might as well have been.
Might as well have been. You don't. Yeah. It's very dull.
I've never seen what Connery pisses into his water pistol. I put this right in his eyes. Ah, piss. Not fair.
Oh, the thing is, there's something Warden says to him in that last scene. He goes, I think he admits he was being blackmailed. And he goes, I really fucked up. And then he dies. It's like, so we never find out what he was being blackmailed for.
No. I think he was a nonce.
I thought what it was going to be, which would make more sense, that it turned out that he had lied about what he had done that day and there was only like two. I genuinely thought the twist was going to be there was only 10 Vietnamese.
Yeah, that would make sense. Instead of how many did he say?
40.
Right, yeah, that would make sense.
There was only 30.
Tell Sean Connery that you lied about how many people you saved him from. Yeah. Actually, there are already 12.
You piece of shit. You only killed 12 Vietnamese people. How can't even look you in the eye?
Or like he like had like parking fines.
Yeah, exactly. But, and in Vietnam, the only I killed two and I backed over them with my car.
Yeah, he had two confirmed kills. It was literally because he put the car in the wrong gear.
I love that. That's a proper naked gun joke.
Naked gun, yeah. Luckily, they turned out to be a Viet Cong. Luckily, they turned out to be drug dealers. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So after the funeral, then Connery and Harmon are like best mates. And then Connery basically says, well, I'm all right. If you want to go out with my daughter, that's fine. But can I watch? Because I'm lonely. He doesn't say that.
He doesn't say that.
And then they kind of walk off together from the funeral, and that's the end.
Yeah. Then the end. And we're done.
I mean, we've got to that point where we've established who the villains are. And then as immediately as we've established that Peel is the baddie, bearing in mind he's only had one scene.
Yeah.
He's then executed pretty much immediately.
Yeah, we have no feelings about the villain whatsoever.
Absolutely not.
Apart from, unless we count Jack Warden as being one of the villains, in which case we actually like him, and it's a shame what happened.
I suddenly had a mental image where you said, count Jack Warden. He's like Dracula. He's got a Dracula cape, and he's called Count Jack Warden. It might just be because I've drunk too much wine.
God, I'd love that. You know what? I want to suck your blood. I don't know what to tell you.
I say we all vote that I suck his blood. What do you think?
I like
Henry Fonda's like, maybe not.
Yeah. 12 angry, 11 angry vampires and one just regular guy.
Guy, and they all want to suck his blood, and he has to turn them all. I'm like, yeah, I love Jack Warden. I think he's great. Although when I was a kid, I used to get him and Robert Loggia confused.
Oh, they've got, I mean, in the dark, they sound the same.
They do, and they're both sort of heavy set. Italian-looking men.
Yeah. I would say Robert Loggia is a slightly more attractive man.
Yeah, I'd definitely bum him.
Yeah. Was Jack Warden just...
I'd let him watch me wank.
Okay.
I definitely had too much wine.
Do you know what? This is your third book, by the way. It's just a list of old actors, character actors, and what you'd let them do to you sexually.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing.
You don't want to hear what Peter Cushing can do to me. You may blow when ready. Absolutely. I love Jack Warden. I think he's great. And he's literally just having a paycheck here, and I begrudge him that at all.
No. But he was the part was written with Marlon Brando in mind. Which
yeah. That would have been rubbish.
Yeah, well, he's bloody awful about that, wasn't he? He turned
it
down.
I hate it when the people go, oh, you know what? This film, they wrote it for Marlon Brando, and I just always think 9 times out of 10, he would have been crap. You know? Yeah, there's nothing worse. I mean, in 1988, Marlon Brando sort of blubbing around this film would have been awful.
Is it, you know,
it would have also taken all the attention away from Connery, who is the North Star of this film.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, again, that it could have been, Brando could have been in when anyone else was in it, because this is one of those ones that went round Hollywood like a dozen times.
Yes.
So originally Lee Marvin and Jeff Bridges, then Lee Marvin got ill and had a dropout, so Jeff Bridges said, I'm not going to do it. Then they asked Gene Hackman to do it, and even Gene Hackman, who was in his wilderness years at that time, said, no, this is shit. Schwarzenegger was supposed to be doing the Harmon part. I imagine that would have turned out a very different film.
Also, can I just say that Hackman was probably doing Superman for the Quest for Peace at this point, so
he was unavailable. He was unfortunately unavailable. But this was going around. What year is this? 88?
88 it came out, so it's probably shot in 87.
Yeah, so this has been swimming around for like 5 or 6 years at that point. And just people kept dying or saying no. But I don't know. Schwarzenegger and Connery would have been great. Would have been interesting.
Brilliant. But we mentioned this on WhatsApp. This is another one of those cases of films people do after they've won an Oscar.
Oh, yes.
And they're always a bit odd.
I had never really considered this. So you win an Oscar and then your next film is a kind of a turd.
It's always a bit odd, yeah. Sometimes you recover from it. Sometimes you don't.
And Connery did
fine. Mentioned to you Gary Oldman. Since he won the Oscar for the Churchill Mr. Blobby film... until Mank, he'd done sort of direct-to-video films.
Yeah. Well, he's hard to cast, isn't he? Because he's not... I don't know if he's a leading man. Because the only part he'd really get would be quite weird sort of parts. He's not going to be like the romantic lead.
I suppose so. But did you watch Mank?
I still haven't. Is it good?
It's brilliant.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like Connery had a perfectly good career. But he didn't really have an Oscar winner's career after this.
No.
Because most of his movies are versions of The Presidio, really, with a few exceptions.
Do you want to do questions? You've done them like 4 times.
I've done them 4 times. What I will say is, I was going to ask you a question about who should be the next Bond. And there's this other guy, the guy who's in Bridgerton, has come out. Just today I saw it, that his odds are something like 4-1 now, that he will be the next Bond.
As well. Yeah.
And I don't know who he is, and I was wondering if you knew anything about him and whether he would be a good Bond.
I will answer your question in that I'm still firmly behind the Dan Stevens or, I'm sad to say, Henry Cavill train, because I think he'd be good. But then I've had a lot of people, much like when Sean Connery died, post me this story about the Bridgerton man.
Mm.
And he looks good.
He does.
So I wouldn't be against it. But I really want Henry Cavill because he's a bit... It's almost like someone sawed Pierce Brosnan and Roger Moore in half and stuck them together.
Oh, God. I just pictured that.
He's very Pierce and he's very Roger at the same time. And if you've not seen the Man from U.N.C.L.E. remake he's in, which is a great film anyway, but he's brilliant in it. And I came away from that thinking... I really want that guy to be the next James Bond.
What I'll say is, and I realised this today when I was reading about this Bridgerton guy, is it might be nice to have a more physically normal-looking Bond.
Yeah.
Because we've had 15 years now of a Bond who looks like he, who in fact, at one point does run through a brick wall. And it might be nice to have that more Roger Moore sort of, yes, he stays in shape.
It's much needed.
Yeah.
It's much needed. I think Henry Cavill, I mean, we're basing Henry Cavill on the fact that, because... Someone posted to me the other day about, how's he ever going to play Bond when he looks like this? And it was a picture of him from his Instagram in the gym where he looks like a house.
Yeah, exactly. He does.
I'm assuming this is for the Snyder Cut, which he's probably contracted to do. So he has to keep in shape. I'm imagining once all that's over with, he won't look like a brick shithouse anymore.
He's in that shape when he did Mission Impossible as well. That's his shape now.
Still, that was, if you remember, that was just after shooting Justice League. because he wasn't allowed to shave off the moustache.
Oh, yeah.
So he has to look like that to be Superman. But when all this finishes, when the DC Universe finally fucking implodes after Zack Snyder shits out his rotten egg and everyone watches it and goes, oh, yeah, it is shit, he possibly can get back to a shape where he isn't that big.
Here's the trouble with that, right, is the ladies love it.
They do, but he doesn't need to be as big as he is. He could probably whittle it down.
I think that's how it works. It's just a bit of whittling. That's all it
whittling.
Is.
Yeah. Whittling. But since I can't ask you the Bond questions, I'm going to ask you a different kind of question.
Okay.
What's your favourite Sean Connery film?
That's an excellent question. It's probably, it probably is a Bond one, then maybe it's... It's can I have a joint three? Because he's great.
Of course you can. Course
Goldfinger, you can. Last Crusade, Untouchables.
What an excellent selection. What's your least favourite Connery film?
Zardoz, but on occasion, that will also be my favourite one, depending on how much I've drunk on Christmas Eve.
I struggle with Zardoz because, yes, it's shit, but when you watch it, the actual plot, if it was sort of stretched out a bit and finalised and twigged, it's a great idea.
It's one of those movies that I'm so glad it exists in the world, that somebody gave him the money to make whatever the hell that is, and that Sean Connery went, you want me to put on a dress? Just put on the dress. All right, then, but there better be good golf clubs around here. And it's just,
get that reveal in the library, and it's like, it's based on the Wizard of Oz. You're like, oh, God, that's so clever. And I really like the conceit behind it, that it is basically the Wizard of Oz. It's just so, it's so 70s in terms of, especially John Borman, in terms of being mental.
Yeah. I can't say Zardoz because I've had a lot of pleasure from it, so I'll probably have to go with a very dull answer of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, that's really bad.
No
defence for that one.
No, it's just a sad way for a career to have gone out.
You can't really turn up to the premiere of your film and then tell everyone the director's a cunt.
You can if it's that film.
You can, but you shouldn't, because you want it to do well.
He didn't give a shit. I got paid in advance for this one. I didn't get points.
So, Dan Thomas, thank you so much for appearing.
As always, it's a pleasure.
Like you're some sort of imp. Welsh imp.
Oh, God, he has had a couple of drinks, hasn't he?
Yeah. But no, thanks. It was lovely to talk to you again. Because it's not like I've been talking to you every week for about...
50 weeks.
3 months.
Yeah. It's more than that. We've been going a long time now.
It is more than that. If you're interested in me and Dan talking, we're sometimes with a doctor, and you can catch us on Patreon, the Smirch Patreon. Changes are coming soon on that one. I'll announce later. But otherwise, Dan, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, as always, it's a joy.
And thanks for talking about The Presidio, even though we didn't talk about it much.
We told them the entire plot. What more do they want?
Exactly. Fuck them. Thank you, Dan. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.